Hello to all of our listeners. Thank you for joining us for another entry in the Chance Mantillon Group's podcast series, Relentless Pursuit. My name is Charlie DeLay. For those of you who do not know me, I'm a senior wealth strategy associate with the Chance Mantillon Group. And over the next few episodes here, we're going to be diving into a series of topics focused towards our next generation clients. Today's call will feature an interview with Tom Mantillon, the managing director of UBS Private Wealth Management and partner of the Chance Mantillon Group, to discuss what we think is the first building block in the wealth management for a goals-based investment consulting. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Charlie. It's great to be here again.
So I think today, Tom, you're going to focus on the importance of long-term goals-based financial planning and how you help your clients construct portfolios to mitigate what you've called one of the greatest potential impacts to long-term investment success, lifestyle risk. And I've heard you talk about this in the 10 years that we've worked together.
Absolutely.
So in that decade that we've worked here, since day one, as being a part of your group, I've heard you talk about lifestyle risk. For our listeners today, can you expand on that? What, in your terms, is lifestyle risk?
Well, you know, it's funny. When you talk about wealth management, most people think of investments. And when people think about the investments and the market overall, our industry has kind of defined risk over time as volatility using modern portfolio theory statistics and even beyond some modern portfolio theory statistics to define risk. And I think that comes out of a very institutional model. For us, clients, as you well know, are individuals. And individuals spend money on their lifestyle. So for us, risk is really a permanent loss of capital that impacts a client's ability to do the things that they want to do. And we really define that as lifestyle risk. It's what actually matters. Volatility is volatility and will always be present in the markets. And if clients focus on the long term and focus on their lifestyle risk, the volatility can become opportunistic and not a threat.
So when we tune into the media and they're focusing on all of the data in the markets, you're saying it's not about beating the market every quarter or every year, but we should be thinking about it in a different way?
Yeah, I think the media is helpful to keep people informed about what things are happening and what is potentially going to move the markets. However, many clients would be, it's almost a disservice to focus on this every day. The market's going to go up, the market's going to go down. The long-term trends are what really matters to investors. And when you think about the market, no, we shouldn't necessarily be focused on the short-term nature of things, but really more the long-term plan, staying on track, and focusing on generating returns that people can use.
I think that's interesting that you mentioned the long-term plan and the long-term trends. Today's discussion is geared towards the younger members of our client family. So in your work with the older generations, that they may be talking to either their parents, their grandparents.
Hey, watch it. Am I the older generation to you, Charlie? I bet I am.
I think so. I mean, just if we produced the birth certificate, you know, the math would just work out there. But what is the framework that has defined the long-term success for those families? And how can we think about our younger investors in a way to compartmentalize how they approach investing?
All of us go through different parts of our lifestyle. We're always spenders. But there are points in time where we are accumulating assets more so. And for younger investors and younger people, the younger generation, maybe that accumulation happens in a retirement plan at their company. Maybe it happens in a self-funded retirement plan like an IRA or a Roth IRA. I think for the younger investor, thinking about the framework the same way maybe their parents or grandparents think about it, or the same way we think about it, could be helpful. That's what I mean by that. So thinking about, we talked about lifestyle risk, thinking about that lifestyle risk is being funded by two buckets, if you will, a liquidity bucket and a longevity bucket. What are those designed to do? Well, as we all know, things come up in life. We're doing this podcast after 8 months of being in a global pandemic. So lots of things have happened over the last 8 months and will continue to happen going forward that people didn't expect. We didn't think that we were going to have all of these people unemployed. We didn't think there was going to be huge rounds of monetary and fiscal policy stimulus. We didn't think the Fed would go to zero again. In fact, we were at a point right before this where we thought rising interest rates were once again going to be a thing as the economy was really doing well. And now here we are. So the liquidity bucket is designed to help moments like this. If we were fully invested and had no cash, and all of a sudden we lost our job, and at the moment we lost our job, the market decided it was going to go down 40%. Well, now we could be forced to sell assets in that down market in order to support lifestyle. And that's where we get to that permanent risk of capital. And first of all, the assets that I liquidate in, you know, March of 2020 are now hundreds of points behind in the S&P, depending upon where I might have reinvested them. Now, if I spent them because I needed that money to hold me over, now I've got a permanent loss of capital. I can't get the 3380 where the market was before the pandemic began in the US and started to impact market performance down to wherever it bottomed, you know, 2180, whatever that number was. The actual numbers aren't relevant, but the size of that move is. And now I don't have that capital invested. I'm selling it at a lower price and I can't get it back. So the liquidity bucket's designed to help that, right? It tied you over to weather. Yeah, a safety net. Tied you over to weather market dislocation. And then we talk a lot to people about how much is the right amount in liquidity bucket. And for young people, maybe it's not 2 years of spending. These are people that will eventually get another job, go back to work. So maybe I don't need 2 years, right? We talk about 2 years to our clients that whose accumulation phase is generally over. We're not earning any capital anymore. We're living off our investments. So maybe 6 months, maybe a year of liquidity bucket. It doesn't have to be funded all at once. So we don't have to build up a year's worth of cash supply before we start investing. Just like we talk about, and I'm sure you talk to all of our younger generation clients or generation 2, 3, 4 clients about deferring money into their 401ks or IRAs or things of this nature. And that becomes investments. These are lifestyle investments that are in that longevity bucket. So, and eventually, you know, when you retire, it'd be great to have, in a perfect world, 1 to 2 years of cash on hand and a portfolio that's going to generate 65 to 85% of the after-tax income needs for you. And that creates those two buckets, then your liquidity bucket and longevity bucket, then give you the 6 to 8 years of income, spendable cash that you can use to withstand almost every market dislocation that we've seen.
So if I were to interpret that, my liquidity bucket might not have 2 years of spending now. It might just be to bridge the gap between jobs, or if I'm making a transition, you know, moving across the country. And my longevity bucket is mostly made up of my paychecks, my earnings month over month. But for if I'm looking at mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, they're retired and their lifestyle is essentially supported by those investments, which is not
correct.
So should I be taking more risk now? I hate to use the word risk, but is my portfolio going to look different than my parents or grandparents right now in those buckets that you talked about, the 401ks, IRAs, retirement planning, after I've satisfied that safety net that you laid out?
It's a great question, Charlie. And you know the answer. So I love the fact that you're asking questions you know the answer to.
I'd bring everybody to the source. So, I learned most, not all of this from you. So let's hear it from the senior man on deck.
Yes, of course. But your allocation is going to look slightly different than Nicole's on our team, which will look a little different than mine on our team, which look a little bit different than Jim Shantz's, who started the team. So all of these things are determined by where you are in your life. And I think from my perspective, younger investors can be thinking about more growth-oriented assets as opposed to more income-producing assets. Because as you so eloquently pointed out, your lifestyle bucket is funded mostly through your paycheck, right? So for clients that are no longer working, obviously that's through their investment portfolio. So I think you're right to say, yeah, we take more risk younger when we have more human capital and earnings potential in the 20s and 30s. Now, my son Nicholas is 18 next week, November 26th. So you all out there might not be listening to this the same day we're recording this. But at 18, you know, what is he interested in investing in? Well, technology, right? He's a tech-centered person. And right now, in November of 2020, as we look at the long-term trends and landscapes for younger investors, sure, there's green technology, health technology, fintech. We're rolling out 5G soon. The beneficiaries of that will be a theme as the kind of next decade of transformation creates opportunities for, you know, these younger investors who are listening to our call about what it is, you know, as we define wealth management.
That's an interesting point, Tom. So, I mean, for most of the listeners in their 20s and 30s or even early 40s, would you caution them at pursuing something like that if they have a particular interest in a particular name or trend or theme from an investment standpoint? Or is that something you would encourage in a measured way?
I think I'd encourage it. We'd be wrong not to. Even for our older generation clients who will come to us and say, hey, I want to own a little bit of X, there's a bucket for that, right? We call that the legacy bucket, right? There's an opportunity to take a little bit more risk, a little bit more, be a little bit more opportunistic, be a little bit more trader, if you will, than investor in that legacy bucket, because we don't expect to need that capital. You know, it's down the road. So it's always fun to get involved in investing and to express your views. Some of them will be right and some of them may not. You've heard me say this a million times, Charlie. The market has the ability to make you right and wrong about the same trade numerous times. It will go up and down. So absolutely. If you're using a product or you're interested in a service, sure, invest in it. It's a great idea. So does that mean you should put your entire portfolio in any one name that you love? No, I don't think that's a good idea at all. There's concentration risk there. And sometimes things occur that you can't perceive, right? That you can't foresee. And, you know, the pandemic is a great example of that. This is not something that many people understood how it would impact markets, economies, countries, and it certainly has had impacts on them all individually in different ways.
But to make your point earlier, when from an investment standpoint, when we have these shocks to the market, as long as we have that safety net in place, that 3 to 6 months in that liquidity bucket, and we have after-tax savings left over, we could be opportunistic here if we're 25, 28 years old in terms of investing and perhaps doing that in that thematic way that we just talked about. So it's not going to look like mom and dad's portfolio. It's not going to look like my grandparents' portfolio. But what are the inflection points? So when are those life events that you need to kind of readjust and realize that, well, hey, my earnings potential is now 10 years less than it was? And when am I starting to think about rebalancing those things?
Yeah, that's another good question. So, and I think in some ways, Charlie, it depends on where those assets are. When do I start to rebalance, if you will, my retirement assets? And we're 20, we're 30, we're 40, we're single, we're married, we have kids. Those are things, those are inflection points that will change people's view of capital. I mean, once that capital is for me, now I have to siphon off some resources and allocate resources to different things, kids, sports, whatever. Obviously, job changes, liquidity events, major inheritances, unfortunately, divorce, and all of those things will create a pause for any person to stop and think about, well, now what? What are my goals now? You know, maybe they've changed. Maybe they haven't. You know, what does my outlook look like? What does my career look like? All those things are questions that, it's why it's, as you well know, it's so much easier to plan for somebody who's retired and 65 than it is for someone who's 40 and working. So
yes, we've seen that. And then we're looking at a plan that's not, you know, not in terms of a long-term cash flow plan that measures in 40 years versus, you know, only a handful of decades. It's yep. Not never easy when looking at that tracker, because we simply don't know what the road's going to look like. So Tom, with that, we're not going to take any more of your time here today. I think this was a great overview of kind of how to think about not only just looking at what the S&P 500 is doing or what markets are doing and how it's going to affect my portfolio, but really to took a long look at the overall trajectory of where my investment assets are going and what they're going to accomplish for lifestyle. And with that, I, you know, I'll put it just in closing, is there anything that in terms of thinking about a plan that you would kind of put as a seed in our next gen client's mind to really think about as they start to mature into their future investment life?
I think the same is true when we talk about any relationship, right? Be engaged. So that'll mean different things to different people, but people with a plan, Charlie, don't panic, right? Mm-hmm. So if I have a plan, if I'm engaged in that plan, it doesn't mean I have to think about it every day or every week or every month or even every year. But if I have a plan and I'm working that plan, then when I do hit some bumps along the road, which I don't know anyone who hasn't, then I can go back to that plan and say, okay, well, you know what? What do I need to do to get back on track? Mm-hmm. And for the younger generation, that becomes, you know, really important. So that would be, you know, stay engaged.
Stay engaged. Well, thanks for being with us today, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Charlie.
Yeah. And to all our listeners, please be on the lookout, not only for our future entries into this series geared towards our next generation, but all of the Shantz Mantione Group's entries into the Relentless Pursuit podcast. You can also go back and look at our archives on our website or on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. I hope everyone has a great day and be well.
Thanks, Charlie. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tom.